This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. Cellular health is the foundation of wellness. True Niagen Pro helps cells stay resilient. True Niagen Pro is a unique form of vitamin B3 clinically proven to safely increase NAD, a vital resource used to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. But this critical cellular resource is not constant. It's been found to decline up to 50% as we age. When NAD levels are low, our cells have a harder time producing the energy they need to maintain our health as we age. Published research shows that increasing NAD boosts cellular energy production, supports healthy cellular metabolism, and promotes cellular repair. When surveyed, True Niagen users report improvements in energy levels and an enhanced sense of overall well-being. True Niagen Pro is backed by multiple published clinical studies and is only available through healthcare practitioners. You can get yours by going to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com for True Niagen Pro. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's focus is on dental health, also a little bit of a segue towards ENT, ears, nose, and throat, because today we're going to talk to Dr. John Peldiak. Dr. Peldiak is a frequent contributor here on Intelligent Medicine. He is a dentist, but he's an extraordinary dentist because he's also a researcher. He was a member of the University of Michigan research group investigating sugar substitutes. He worked on prevention programs for Head Start. He's a founding member of the American Association for Oral and Systemic Health. That's important because we know that oral health relates to our systemic health. We'll talk a little bit about that in today's broadcast. He's author of a book entitled Sweet Smart, another book entitled Dental Health. He's got a new book coming out about erythritol. And so let's discuss dental self-health and what we can do to gain and maintain great dental health. John, welcome back to our show. It's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine.
Thanks. It's very nice to be with you, Dr. Hoffman.
Okay, so once again, make the case for the relationship between oral health and systemic health. I mean, obviously, we don't want all our teeth to fall out. We don't want toothaches. We won't want to all end up wearing dentures, spending a lot of money on dental care. Okay, that's the oral part of the equation. But what about the systemic relationship?
Well, we talk a lot about barriers and portals in the body. We have barriers, which is obvious, such as skin is a barrier to the outside environment. But also our teeth and gums are a barrier to hostile forces that are coming from the outside through the portals of the nose and mouth. So those are the openings. Nose and mouth are the openings, and then we have our natural barriers and our natural protection, our teeth and our gums. If they're solid, if they're uncompromised, we have good solid protection against whatever invaders are coming through. So what we really need to do is look at our natural protective factors and see what we can do to support those natural protective factors, and that'll help optimize our health.
And now we have, even since I last talked to you, there's increasing evidence that there's a relationship between oral health and circulatory system, cardiovascular disease, but also now a link to Alzheimer's disease. Tell us about that.
We're seeing more and more of that in the news lately, and it makes perfect sense. Again, if our defensive barriers are compromised, if there's a hole in the tooth that leads to an infection, to an abscess, that leads from the outside to the inside. That's letting things through. We talk a lot about leaky gut in the health realm. Well, how about leaky gums? That's where the digestive system begins, right up front. Yeah. If our gums are leaky, we're going to have foreign invaders getting right into our bloodstream. And this is what's really amazing that's been found out more recently with the PCR DNA techniques, where they can actually trace where these bacteria are coming from and where they end up. And we've got now an amazing array of evidence to show that the particular bacteria that's an initiator in gum disease called PG, or Porphyromonas gingivalis, ends up in all these lesions around the body. We're talking in Alzheimer's disease. We're talking any type of cardiovascular disease, even colorectal diseases, respiratory tract infections, adverse pregnancy outcomes, and a strong association with diabetes and insulin resistance, too.
Yeah, and so, for example, you know, I'll see patients sometimes who inexplicably have a high C-reactive protein. It's a marker of inflammation, and I ask them, do your joints hurt? Do you have swollen knees or problems with your hips or shoulders? And sometimes they'll deny it. Do you have chronic nasal infections? Because we know that sinusitis can raise your C-reactive protein. But then, you know, I'll do an oral exam. I'll look in their mouths, and we see all kinds of problems. And so that can be the source of not just local, but systemic inflammation, which leads to all kinds of problems, premature arterial disease, it compromises your blood sugar handling, and so on. Cancer,
exactly.
Too. Cancer as well.
Exactly. Inflammation is not necessarily a bad thing. We really need inflammation to heal our wounds and fight off those invaders. But if we have unnecessary, chronic, smoldering inflammation from, let's say, a gum disease or a tooth cavity that leads to an infection, that's a slow drip, drip, drip. That's a smoldering inflammation that our system's always fighting. And it's fighting it system-wide. It's not just fighting it locally, right in the mouth, and that's something we've seen recently with the study of this PG infection, is that it gets carried by the circulatory system throughout the whole body. So this is affecting all our systems. So what we used to think of as a localized problem, let's just treat it locally, now becomes much more serious in that big realm of medicine, where you say, I'm doing all the right things. Why isn't this resolving properly? Why is the C-reactive protein still very high? And it could be a reason that you have this smoldering infection in the gum tissue with these invasive type bacteria that get into the tissues, that get into the bloodstream, and that's setting off a whole chain reaction throughout the entire system.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you. Here goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. Cellular health is the foundation of wellness. True Niagen Pro helps cells stay resilient. True Niagen Pro is a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, a vital resource used to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. But this critical cellular resource is not constant. It's been found to decline up to 50% as we age. When NAD levels are low, our cells have a harder time producing the energy they need to maintain our health as we age. Published research shows that increasing NAD boosts cellular energy production, supports healthy cellular metabolism, and promotes cellular repair. When surveyed, True Niagen users report improvements in energy levels and an enhanced sense of overall well-being. True Niagen Pro is backed by multiple published clinical studies and is only available through healthcare practitioners. You can get yours by going to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com for True Niagen Pro. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Dr. John Peldiak. So other than, you know, going to the dentist and getting checked out, you know, which we advocate on a regular basis, and good dental hygiene, you know, the usual, you're involved in specific efforts to head off these types of dental problems ahead of time. So, you know, now we have, and this for many decades, we'd have a big national campaign, fluoride in our drinking water. That's our mainstay of public health policies to reduce cavities and oral disease. What's the problem with that?
Well, Dr. Robert Lustig, who talks a lot about the problems with excess sugar in the diet, has pointed out the correlation between high sugar intakes and dental diseases. And what he suggests is that fluoride over the past 60 years has masked the problem to a certain extent, because fluoride does make the teeth more acid resistant. But he also points out that the effects of fluoride is maxed out. you can only achieve just so much with fluoride. It's not taking care of the whole picture. It's not strengthening your defenses except that immediate mineralized barrier that we have in the teeth. There are other things we need to do to promote our other natural defenses, such as our saliva and our pH balance, our bacterial balance in our mouth, which is an extremely important role in the future. We're going to see how important it is to address and balance the microbiome, to have a healthy microbiome, because our healthy bacteria really provides a strong defense against these pathogens, these harmful agents invading our system. So we have to support the healthy microbiome. The old way of looking at things was to try to wipe out bacteria. We found out that that was the wrong approach, that what we were doing was opening the gates to let in the toughest offenders come in and take over. So sometimes with fluoride, we get a certain benefit, but it does not really take care of balancing that microbiome, and that's what we need to do looking forward.
So what are some strategies for a more natural way of suppressing the bad bacteria without sterilizing our mouths? I mean, clearly there are things that we can use, triclosan, powerful chemical mouthwashes, rinses and such, and even antibiotics. I mean, this is actually a big trend in periodontal care, is that they'll administer low-dose tetracycline, for example, to suppress bad bacteria.
Right, and part of that with low-dose tetracycline is to strengthen the fibers also to prevent the collagen breakdown.
Right, it is somewhat anti-inflammatory, and it has some properties other than just killing off bad bacteria.
Right, sort of the way statins also have an anti-inflammatory effect. So in some of these broad-acting medications, it's difficult to pinpoint exactly where the benefit is coming from, if there is a long-term benefit, and that's the problem. Sometimes we don't understand the collateral damage when we attack the microbiome or the dental biofilms, which are very tough. Mm-hmm. The biofilm is a structured and organized system of protecting the microorganisms in a protective layer, mostly made out of linked-up sugar molecules along with proteins and fats. But it really starts out as sugar molecules linking together, and they form a very sticky film and a protective barrier, and it makes it much more difficult for any types of antibiotics to penetrate that barrier, that matrix. And if we could find a way to break up that sugar-rich matrix, that sticky matrix, that's going to be another way of looking forward in the future. If our bacteria in the mouth are more free-floating, if they're not organized, if they're not forming harmful communities which can do localized damage, and all it takes is a localized beachhead to break through and allow the bad actors to pour into the bloodstream and affect the entire system. So we have to find a way to break up that tenacious biofilm. And antibiotics can't do that because they can't penetrate biofilms very effectively at all.
And for a quick home demonstration of what a biofilm is, forget to brush your teeth, go to bed, and the next morning before you brush your teeth again, just run your fingernail across your front incisor and get a little scraping of the gunk that is accumulated on the surface of your tooth. That is a biofilm, and ultimately that can harden into a tartar, which is, you know, a predecessor to cavities and periodontal disease, right?
Exactly. It's forming its own protective barrier. The bacteria, the harmful bacteria, are trying to protect themselves. They're trying to seal themselves off from our natural defenses. So the idea is to get back to supporting our natural defenses and empowering our natural defenses against that sort of invader. And one way to do it is to form a looser matrix in that biofilm to make it more difficult for those bad actors to take over. And one way to do that is to limit sugar. If you ate sugar very seldom and in smaller amounts, but mostly the frequency is what counts, feeding that biofilm, the sugar provides all the links, all the arms to link together, all the docking stations to form a fortress around these harmful bacteria. and then they can work their way down from the tooth into the gum line and proceed down in there into the softer tissue and break that down. So what we'd like to do is find something that would take the place of some of these sugar molecules that form this tenacious linkage. And one aspect that we looked at are these sugar substitutes. If you could find something that in nature looks a lot like a sugar molecule, has the same docking stations, basically.
And we're not talking NutraSweet here.
Right.
Sucralose.
We're talking about...
Those are man-made substances. They're laboratory-engineered sugar substitutes.
Right. We're talking about if you could take a sugar molecule and remove the active part, the active docking station that latches on tenaciously to each other and to surfaces. If we could block that arm, then you'd have a sugar that just slides right off. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what nature provides. And this is what was so interesting about looking at xylitol as a sugar substitute early on, because the first uses for xylitol, it was discovered more than a century ago, but it was in very limited use because they really didn't know what use it would have. Mostly they found it in birch trees.
It's sort of like a Nordic sugar. I mean, if you live in Scandinavia or something and you're cut off from supplies of cane sugar, which is where mostly came from, you could rely on a derivative of birch to sweeten your foods, right?
Exactly. They called it birch sugar. But it was very limited supply until after World War II. There was some small use of xylitol in the diabetic diet because it made a nice substitute for sugar. It looked and performed almost like ordinary sugar, tasted like ordinary sugar. So it's very, very good. But it supplied much fewer calories and a much lower impact on blood sugar and insulin than regular sugar does. So
just to be clear, xylitol is not zero calories,
right?
But it's a very, very tiny percentage of it is taken up and metabolized into sugar. Is that the case?
Right, because only some of the xylitol is absorbed and metabolized. The rest of it passes through, just like soluble fiber.
Uh-huh.
In fact, it really does take the role of soluble fiber in the gut. In some of the literature, it's called a prebiotic.
Okay.
Which means it does favor the healthy bacteria in the gut. So it's not a broad-spectrum bacterial killer, like some people have this misapprehension that xylitol is somehow a broad-spectrum antibacterial. It really does target the sugar eaters, especially in the mouth, the bacteria that love sugar and leave acid as a residue, as a waste product. So xylitol is really quite specific in that way. It leaves the good guys alone. It doesn't mess with the good guys. What it does is it interferes with the metabolism of the sugar eaters, so you're not getting the acid production from those bacteria in the mouth, and it weakens them because they see xylitol as a molecule that looks almost exactly like sugar. They love it. They eat it up. They latch onto it and get very little energy from it, and essentially it wears them out. So that the nice bacteria are able to compete successfully with these harmful slugs.
And it weakens the biofilms. It kind of gets around that impasse where antibiotics sometimes don't reach.
Good point. And that's been pointed out in several papers about how well xylitol penetrates the biofilm. It's a little smaller molecule. It's one carbon smaller than the sugars that we usually eat, so it slides in easily. And those docking stations we talk about with regular sugar molecules, xylitol doesn't have them. It has the same appearance, but it has non-reactive surface. So it's, by comparison, a very slippery surface. And it slides right into these areas that would normally be linked together in the biofilm. Guess what? Can't link up with xylitol. So that creates these little gaps or pores in the biofilm, which makes the entire biofilm much looser, easier to remove, easier to penetrate, and more room for the helpful bacteria, the ones that live at normal range of acid and non-acidic conditions, as opposed to the bad guys who prefer a very acidic condition. Well, guess what? Now the saliva can get into those areas, rinse away the acid, and make the environment unfavorable to the harmful bacteria that would like to take over.
It sounds like plausible science mechanistically, but are there studies that show that it actually can reduce tooth decay, but also periodontal disease? I mean, two different things related, but what does the evidence show?
Well, the interest in xylitol with tooth decay really didn't begin until the 1960s. Later in the 1960s, xylitol was already a bit of a curiosity as a sugar substitute. It was still made only in small quantities, but by the 1960s, they were able to figure out better ways to produce more xylitol, and thought that this might be an interesting substance to use, for instance, in the diabetic diet. And they also found in their tests and their studies that it did have some of these antimicrobial properties for these harmful bacteria in the mouth. So it was tested finally on a large scale in the early 1970s, and this is a beautiful study. You would appreciate this one. Well, you've met Dr. Mäkinen from Finland.
Yes.
He was the one who...
A real pioneer in this field, yeah.
He really got it started, and he and Dr. Shannon were nominated for the Nobel Prize in Medicine for this study. They essentially took all the sugar out of the diet wherever it was accessible and replaced all that sugar with xylitol. And specifically, they're looking at all the blood chemistries, all the blood markers to make sure that no harm was being done. But at the same time, they were very focused on what xylitol did for the teeth. And they found that by replacing sugar in the diet, tooth decay was almost eliminated. And they said, but this isn't really practical because xylitol is still very expensive. Maybe if we just put a small amount of xylitol in chewing gum, let's see what effect that has. And they were amazed that by putting this tiny amount of xylitol, about a teaspoon, 2 teaspoons a day worth of xylitol in the form of chewing gum, and gave that to their volunteers to chew 3 times a day, tooth decay was reduced by 85%.
Wow.
Now, what makes that study so amazing is that they actually compared it to people eating a regular diet. You see, in most of these studies that have been done since then, I suppose it would be considered unethical to let people use sugar.
Right.
So in most of the new studies, xylitol is not being compared to sugar. It's being compared to erythritol or other
stuff. It's a little bit like the Tuskegee Airmen study, where they allowed the men to continue to have syphilis. To test the proposition that antibiotics are beneficial for syphilis. You know, it's like, ahead and eat as much sugar as you want, and all your teeth will fall out. You know, we already know that. Thank you very much.
Good point. And the other big study was done in Belize in Central America in the 1980s, and they also had a group that used a sugar-type chewing gum because they said it's on the market. Everybody uses it, so why not have that as part of the study?
It was the control. It was the control.
Right. Yeah. And, of course, you know Dr. Peter Allen. He's the medical director for the nation of Belize. The results, when he saw the results, he was astounded. He said, this is going to shake the whole world because the children there who used the xylitol chewing gum just during school days, 100% reduction in tooth decay.
Wow.
It was just amazing. And he says, this is going to essentially make a world to reduce or eliminate tooth decay just by having school children use this special chewing gum. But for some reason, I guess we didn't get enough publicity for that, and it never really caught on the way we expected it to.
Now, you are the author of a paper recently with one of our recent guests, Dr. Mark Cannon. We talked to him, I believe it was last year or the year before, about his research on xylitol. I want to just preview that because we divide our podcast into two parts. In part two, we're going to talk about the impact of xylitol on periodontal disease. Our guest is John Peldiak. He's a dentist. He's also a researcher and involved in public health prevention programs utilizing natural means of preventing cavities and perio disease. And he's an educator, and he's educating us on the subject of xylitol. Just to provide you with a little bit of perspective on this, Spry Dental products incorporate xylitol. We're going to talk a little bit more about their full range of product offerings. But the next time you visit your retailer, make sure that you ask them to carry a wide variety of spry products with xylitol. Whole Foods is the only major retailer who does not carry spry products with xylitol, unfortunately. So next time you visit Whole Foods, let them know that their idea of only carrying sugar-sweetened mints is a very bad idea. And be sure to visit on Facebook at Spry Smile. That's a place where you can get the heads up on Spry line of dental products. So stay with us, Dr. John Peldiak. We'll be right back with more of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.